This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. What goes into your carbon footprint? Sure, those unnecessary car trips. You leave the lights on, the energy suck every time you turn on the hairdryer in the morning. But consider one of the biggies when it comes to carbon emissions, air travel. All those cross-country flights to shake hands on the deal, to visit that aunt you've always been waiting to see. That plane exhaust adds up. And this week, the EPA. The EPA calculated just how much it adds up to. And here to talk about that, as well as other selected short subjects in science, is BuzzFeed News editor, science editor Virginia Hughes. Welcome back.
Thanks, Ira. Good to be back.
Virginia, let's talk about the EPA. It's putting a number on all that pollution?
Yeah, 760 million tons of greenhouse gases every year into the atmosphere.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's actually only 2% of global emissions, mm-hmm. which might not seem like very much, but environmental advocates are pretty worried about it because our air travel use is going up and expected to go up a lot more in the coming years. There was one estimate found that by 2020, plane emissions are supposed to be 70% higher than they were in 2005.
Even as they try to come out with more energy efficient engines.
Yeah, exactly. Even after the efficiency is accounted for. So it's a lot. And what I find interesting about this EPA thing is the EPA can never win, no matter what it does. No. You know, it's got, for this case, there's a lot of Republicans, notably Lamar Smith, who's the chairman of the House Science Committee, who says this is a terrible idea. This is going to mean that folks are going to pay more for their airline tickets, and it's government regulation.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. And then on the other side, you have some environmental groups who are saying, EPA, you didn't do enough here, and this is really, you're just punting this. So what the EPA said is that they want to set an international standard for emissions rates that will be done by this UN body in 2016. And environmentalists say that body is pro-industry. So, yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. Let's move on to some very interesting, another scientist with his foot in his mouth, right?
Yeah, this one's unfortunate. So this all happened at a big conference of science journalists that was taking place in Seoul, South Korea this week. And in addition to journalists, there were a few scientists there speaking. And one of them, whose name is Tim Hunt, it's actually Sir Tim Hunt because he's been knighted.
And Nobel Prize.
Yeah, he won the Nobel Prize in 2001. So he was asked to speak at an invitation-only lunch at this conference. And the lunch, believe it or not, was about honoring women in science. And Hunt said some apparently pretty sexist things. There were no recordings of what he said, but after he said them, a bunch of the journalists who were there got together and created what they called a post hoc transcript. So according to that, Hunt said that he acknowledged that he had a reputation as a chauvinist, and he also said that he was in favor of single-sex labs. And he also said, so this is according to the transcript, "Let me tell you about my trouble with girls. You fall in love with them, they fall in love with you, and when you criticize them, they cry."
Oh, gosh.
In front of journalists, right? What's the guy thinking? So this goes crazy on social media, and a bunch of outlets cover it, including BuzzFeed. And then the next day, Hunt does an interview with BBC Radio, where he kind of apologized, kind of didn't apologize. He said he was really sorry, but he also said that he did mean part of the remarks. He said it was a stupid thing to do in the presence of all those journalists, and then it was sort of intended as a lighthearted and ironic comment.
And just most recently, he...
Oh, right. So today, he's on the Scientific Council of the European Research Council, and they announced that he had resigned today, and he also resigned his honorary professorship at University College London. So, yeah, it's a shame. I think, you know, it's easy to get wrapped up in the specifics of any one incident, but I think part of the reason for the furor on Twitter is that this is just one of many things that have been coming out recently about sexism in science. Just a couple of weeks ago, there was a column in the journal Science that advised a woman to put up with her advisor looking down her shirt. And before that, there was a peer reviewer at PLOS One, another journal, who suggested that two female researchers should find a male co-author so that their paper would be taken more seriously. Not to mention that women get paid less than men in science, and there are fewer women in science. So I think it's...
Nothing has changed.
Yeah, I mean, that's
you know,
a sad
statement. Some stuff more remains the same, but stuff has advanced, but not far enough. But let me get, before I run out of time, let me get you to your last one. This is a quirky story about some eels with a drug habit.
Yeah, so this is a story about our dirty oceans, and particularly about what happens to fish when cocaine gets into the water. Apparently, this is pretty common in Italy, and especially in a river called the Sarno River, which apparently has 15 grams of cocaine flowing through it every day. So a group of Italian researchers exposed some fish, the European eel, to cocaine. And it turns out, surprise, surprise, this makes the eels hyperactive. It also, though, changes, it makes these microscopic changes to the eel's intestine and their skin. It decreases their mucus cells, which is pretty bad for them. Yeah. So, you know, what we put in the ocean
Well, you know, we've heard stories over the years about pharmaceuticals that you take.
Sure, yeah.
Birth control pills, all kinds of antibiotics. Most of them go right through you and right out down the toilet and into the water, right? Into the system. This is just another one, but because it's cocaine.
It makes a splashy
eels,
headline, yeah.
So to speak, it makes a splashy headline. So, and how much was in the river?
It's 15 grams of cocaine every day.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't remember something. They came up with the estimate of how much that was worth. It was thousands of dollars worth of cocaine.
That's right. If you figure that's just a fraction of what's going on in the city.
Yeah, just like residues from, I mean, who knows what, right?
Right. Well, that's great stuff, as always, Virginia. Thank you for joining us. Virginia Hughes is science editor for BuzzFeed News. She joins us here in our New York studio. Now it's time to play Good Thing, Bad Thing. That's because every story has a flip side. As California's record drought continues, homeowners are looking for new ways to cut back on water. One popular option? Rip up your water-guzzling lawn, lay down a thick green carpet of plastic. Artificial grass is, of course, green. But is it green? Joining us to talk about the environmental pros and cons of fake grass is Adria Vazel. She's the author of the Ecoholic book series and a columnist at Now Magazine in Toronto. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, thanks for having me.
All right, let's talk about what's good about fake grass, or frass,
well,
as it's called, right?
Yeah, frass, exactly. Well, you'll never have to pull out a sprinkler again. And that's a good thing because a typical suburban lawn can actually consume about 10,000 gallons of water a year, and that's above and beyond rainwater. So, you know, that's a big deal, especially in places like California where the rain isn't coming. And, you know, you will have to still pull out your hose to cool them down, I hear, once in a while. But otherwise, no sprinklers, no hoses. Another plus is, well, you don't have to weed them. You'll never see a dandelion ever again. And that means you also won't need any chemical pesticides or herbicides. And so you don't have to worry, you know, if your neighbor Bill has an artificial lawn, you don't have to really worry about whether he's spraying some suspect toxin all over the place. So that's another plus.
And you don't have to mow it, right?
And
all the energy and whatever that takes.
Exactly. And, you know, the thing is, a typical old gas mower can turn out over 100 pounds of greenhouse gases in one season. So that's a big savings for sure.
Yeah.
And it's also the stuff that we're using for lawns isn't the same controversial stuff that's used on soccer fields that we're hearing a lot of negative stuff around. That's, you know, related really to the recycled tire infill, which has a lot of contaminant concerns. And luckily, most residential lawn makers that are, you know, making artificial lawns are not using that recycled tire crumb anymore. So that's good.
So what's the bad then?
Well, there is quite a long list of bad. And I mean, one of the, you know, basic bads would be that it's made out of virgin plastic, so that's a non-renewable material, you know, derived from petroleum, and petroleum is never particularly sustainable. And so, you know, they're made out of basic plastics like polyethylene, polypropylene, and the companies will tell you that they're 100% recyclable, but to be honest with you, you know, when you ask, they will tell you, well, actually, we don't know where you can recycle it today, and we don't have the facilities or the support for you on that back end of it. So that's a downside. And, you know, fake lawns can't actually clean the air the way, you know, an old-fashioned grass lawn could. There's no photosynthesis going on.
And they're very hot. Oh, don't astroturf.
Yeah, they do, actually. Really, and you've been hearing about that related to the Women's World Cup. A lot of complaints that fake lawns get sizzling, actually up to 60 degrees hotter than grass. So that makes a big difference on a hot day. Of course, it is a little bit better if you don't have that black recycled tire crumb, but the plastic doesn't breathe the way grass does, and natural grass does cool the air. So you're losing out on that. And, you know, also conservationists are raising alarm bells around basically the loss of habitat. So, you know, you won't get lawns, birds able to sit on your lawn and, you know, pull out worms and that kind of thing. You're losing habitat for beneficial insects. And it is a concern. You're seeing a few wildlife trusts raising complaints about this, worried about the rise of artificial grass and how it contributes to the decline of habitat. So that's a big one for sure. And, the heat is an issue as well. You know, rain. What happens to the rain when you have fake grass? Well, those artificial lawns are actually perforated, so that's a good thing. The rain seeps through, and they say it goes down to the soil underneath. The problem is that the soil under that fake grass gets compacted, and there are no natural plant roots in that grass to kind of help funnel the water underground. So if it does rain, that soil could just easily slip off. I mean, sorry, that rain could just run off your soil into the streets, where you're contributing to, you know, storms or overflows and that kind of nasty stuff.
Well, you could go on, I'm sure.
There's
a lot of but we've run out of time. I want to thank you very much, Andrea, for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thanks for having me. But if you are looking for alternatives, I do recommend native grasses that are naturally drought resistant.
There you have it, Andrea Vassil, author of the Ecoholic book series and a columnist in Now Magazine in Toronto.